Welcome to the Lifeway Student Ministry Podcast. I'm your host, Ben Trueblood, and with me today is a good friend of mine, Jeff Borton. Jeff is the youth pastor at Christ Fellowship in Miami, and I'm going to turn it over to Jeff and let him tell you guys who he is, family, how long he's been at his church, and all that good stuff.
Awesome. Thank you, Ben. Hey, everybody. So excited to be hanging out with Ben today and talk some student ministry stuff. I've been in Miami for almost 12 years and have loved watching what God is doing here. Part of Christ Fellowship, we're a multi-site church, and so it's been neat to see God not only grow our church, but you know, grow students and watch them live on mission for God. I'm married. I have three sons. One's in college. He plays football at Wake Forest University. And then I have a five-year-old and a three-year-old. And so our lives are really full, and we enjoy God's creation in Miami, especially today when it's 73 degrees and beautiful, and looking forward to getting on the boat tomorrow. So if you hear this podcast and you're in Miami, come hang out, man. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, and so everybody that is in the Midwest or northern part of our country is super jealous right now, there's probably snow on the ground in some of those areas. And you have blue skies and out on the water tomorrow, so that's awesome.
Yeah. There are sacrifices, Ben, for ministers. So
for sure,
God's good.
Well, one of the things as I've known, man, Jeff drew some conferences and things. I think we've known each other now for 7 years or so.
I think so. Yeah,
it's been a little while. And one of the things that I want us to talk through that I think would be really, really cool for listeners to hear. One of the things that I've been really impressed with about your heart and the way that you lead your student ministry is connected directly to how you mobilize your students to be on mission in the community. I've been able to be down there with you during a mission camp event where it's focused specifically on that, and know that you're really, really involved in mobilizing your students to love on and serve the community year-round. So let's talk about that just a little bit. What were some things going on in your student ministry? You've been there 12 years. Mm. What were some things that you saw that made you say, man, we're not in the community enough, and maybe we need to restructure some things to do that?
Now, that's a great question. You know, it really started when we first got here. It was summertime. It was our first summer here, and we're looking around, you know, for our city. You know, the stats are stats, but you know, over 90% unchurched, and that's true. You know, it's true. There's so many people. I was meeting students all the time who didn't know even the basics of the Bible, didn't understand what Jesus did for them, and I know that's true a lot of areas. But our team was looking around, going, man, we've got to reach some kids. So for that first summer, we said, instead of having our small groups in the summer, we'll meet, and instead of getting together in groups, we're just going to go out and start doing some different things to just love on the community and maybe get a chance to share our faith. And this was really like the first things that we started doing. And so we were taking water bottles to the park. You know, it's so hot and there's teams playing everywhere. So we would take water and just pass it out and talk to people. We were trying to serve any way that we could, really basic things that a student could even do on their own without leadership involved. And so that's kind of where it began. And then as we watched how God was using that over the years, you know, it didn't start to what it is now. It started really small and really informal and just, hey man, let's figure this thing out, you know?
Yeah, how did your students react to that in the beginning? You mentioned some of the things, easy things, simple things to do, a lot of them that don't require a leader to directly be involved. Was that something that your students embraced right away, or was there a lot of coaching involved along with that?
I'd say there's probably a few that got it, but for the most part, it was a lot of coaching and a lot of vision casting. I think one of the big things that we've learned over the years is that if whoever's leading it, if they'll cast the vision for the why, like why this is important, and to be honest, even more so than, you know, like, hey, we just want to tell these people about Jesus, even though that's at the end of the day what we want to do. So some students are afraid to do that, so they'll that pushes them away. But when we teach them, you know, man, you're a tangible representation of Jesus, and even if you don't get to share your faith, this is still the right thing to do. And so what we found was just a lot of vision casting. You know, I always use the example of, like, Ty Pennington from that show, Extreme Makeover, and how he gets his whole team in the RV and they watch a video and everybody's boo-hooing. Yeah. But that team at the end, you know, is like, dude, we are going to build the heck out of this house, you know?
That's right. And
right. So, like, even me, I got caught up in that and, like, this is awesome. So, really, that's the kind of effort that it takes when you're casting vision students about mission. Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, we want Jesus to be shared, God to be glorified, but sometimes it takes for students to see more. Not that there's more important than that, but the bigger picture of how they fit and how what they're doing right now can lead to that. And so, no, it was not easy early. And it still isn't. That's still, to this day, requires the same exact thing, but more students get it.
You know? Yeah. Well, I was with you, I think it was maybe two and a half years ago now. Mm-hmm. And to me, from an outsider's perspective, man, it looked like the students were engaged. They knew what the process was. They knew what to do. They were excited about loving on their community. And it was like, I don't know that I could ever say I've seen another ministry where the majority of the students like this were completely bought in and dialed into the purpose of the event. I mean, they knew what it was for, and they dove in with everything that they had. It was awesome to see. Was there some place along the way that it turned and you something clicked in you and said, okay, it's turned the corner and we're heading, like, we've, not that we've arrived, but you right, knew right. that it was sinking into the culture of your ministry?
Really, yeah, that's a great question. You know, as we look at the history of our student ministry, it started with us doing that in the summer, and then what we did is we said, man, our small groups, we're going to have our small groups start reaching out at least once a quarter. And there was a lot, the philosophy, our philosophy was kind of evolving for lack of developing, for lack of a better term, meaning that, like, we're learning, okay, so not only do we want, you know, we're thinking about what kind of student we want to graduate and have the kind of faith that sticks when they're older. So we realized that we can't just talk about going and sharing your faith. We've got to create opportunity and experiences and then show them how, because unfortunately most families won't have that opportunity for their students. So we thought, man, if we show them and give them the opportunity, then the chance of them doing it is going to increase. And so we made it very easy to do, you know, try to take out as many roadblocks as possible. And then one summer, it was 2005, Hurricane Wilma or Katrina hit us first, clearly not as bad as Mississippi and Louisiana, but we got hit, and then we watched what happened there, and we said, you know, we got to be part of it. We know what it's like to be part of a community that gets devastated.
Yeah.
And then we watched up there, and we said, man, we want to be part of that. So we organized our first spring break trip to take students and leaders to go there, and we partnered with a church. And it was right after that week. You know, we'd done traditional summer camp where we go wakeboarding and all that cool stuff, and we were paying attention to conversations afterwards, where it seemed like after a couple weeks, you know, for us, I'm not speaking for anybody else, but for us, it seemed like it lost a little bit of its gusto.
Right.
And so after that first Katrina trip, we noticed that many students that had gone, not all, had a different perspective on what it was like to serve, like, selflessly and to love Jesus and just love people because that's what you do. And that's when a light bulb went off and said, man, this is where we want to spend our time. Like, it was a no-brainer to want to spend the time to organize again and do it again. So I think we went up four more times as a student ministry over the next couple of years.
Wow.
But out of that first trip, we started our summer mission camp, which you were a part of, because we thought, man, if our students were that passionate going, you know, 12, 14 hours away, what if we did that here? You know, what if our students loved our city? Because, you know, we believe Acts 1:8, we want them to love their neighbor and love their city, ultimately love the world. So we're thinking, man, we live in an international city. If our students will learn to love this city, man, they can learn to love the world. And yeah. So that's when we began that whole mission camp journey, you know, and it started like everything starts, small and difficult and, you know, bumps in the road and whatever. But we knew from what we'd seen that it was going to be worth it, and it really has. And mission camp, just for clarity, is all we stay at one of our church buildings. Initially, I thought, nobody's going to want to do this. It's not fun to stay at a church building. Like, all the excuses went up. Like, they're right close to home. They're going to call their parents and come get them. But we got to try this. And so what we did is we partner with local organizations so that our students can not only serve there, but there's opportunity, and many do, to serve after the week of mission camp is over. So some of our kids serve at like a battered women's shelter during the summer, and they still do it. Some small groups are still engaged, where they spend time with the women that are in these shelters for whatever reason they're there, and they minister to them, and they work with them, and all these things. And then, you know, we have orphanages and horse farms that teach disabled kids how to deal with life through that. I mean, there's a wide spectrum of areas, but they're all local, so that if a kid says, man, I really enjoyed pouring my heart out there, they're not getting on a bus and leaving that area. They can actually get in the car and head over there once a month or whatever it is they can do. And so the effect was our students can continue with the passion that God gave them for them for a specific ministry, and it's here in our city, you know?
Yeah.
So that's kind of how it all snowballed.
I love that so much. What you mentioned a little bit from the next question I had, which was, how have you seen this impact the students in your ministry as well as the community? So you mentioned it's given an avenue not just for serving that takes place at an event, but something that they can continue serving at through local ministries all the time, year-round if they choose to. What other ways have you seen this impact your student ministry at large and then in the community as well?
In student ministry, we started realizing that mission camp is an on-ramp not only to do ministry in the area where they served during the summer, but also in their schools. A few years ago, probably 3 years ago, we decided that out of mission camp, one of the next steps would be, okay, now you take what God is teaching you here and you start a club, or you do something in your school, whether Fellowship of Christian Athletes or First Priority of South Florida, whatever that is, you take that and you start something in your school. You know, like, where we refuse is basically what we're saying, to let what God has done in your heart die here. And so we're trying to think of easy next steps, things that they're probably already doing, where they can continue. And so for our students, we've seen many of them take ownership and start clubs in their schools. Right now, I think we're just over 50 different schools with clubs that students are a part of, you know, and we're watching them reach their friends, which is cool. And it didn't start that way. You know, it started with one, two, whatever. But that's been a great on-ramp for our students. One of the things that we say, at least we don't say this to students, but our student guys get together and we say, we know that missions is getting the DNA. Missions is in our DNA when students are willing to do this stuff without it being on the student ministry calendar. Hmm. You know, when we don't have to program something and say, okay, now you do mission. We have to, because that's what enables and equips them to learn. But we know that it's in our DNA when we see it happening and a kid comes back and tells a story about how they did something without being told they had to. And so we see more of that. And so we know, okay, it's getting there. It's not perfect. It's sloppy a lot of times. It's not where we want it to be, but we know we're going in the right direction. And so that's our students. And in terms of our community, God has used it, you know, to open a lot of doors. And now we have people calling us, hey, can you partner with us for this summer? Hey, can you guys, you know, will you be able to fit us in? And so it's not, and I want to be clear, it's not just student ministry. Our church has taken the same approach. And so praise God that our church has a name in the community for actually loving the community without strings attached. And so we've seen some really, really cool stuff. We've seen families come to Christ, get engaged, all kinds of things happening as a result in the community of how Christ Fellowship has been loving them. So,
yeah, man, that's cool. You mentioned specifically some of the school campus clubs that started as students began to catch a vision for serving and loving their community. Were the couple of questions for you there? Were the schools? You know this, schools are becoming more and more closed to church ministries. Do you think the schools, seeing what you guys were doing and seeing what their own students were doing in the community, kind of opened the doors for them to allow students to then start more of a ministry environment on the on their campus?
Without hesitation, 100%. I think 7-8 years ago, especially when we were deep in the recession, we were trying to find ways. Many of the schools were closed. Like, I'm not sure where. I know in some parts of the country it's more open, but here we can't go eat lunch with a student.
Yeah,
we can't. You can't go walk the halls, and you know that was definitely true 7-8 years ago. So I remember our church as a whole, not just our student ministry, said, "Let's love on the schools with no strings attached," meaning let's find a way to serve. And we're not going to ask for anything in return. And so I remember calling one high school, Palmetto, where our oldest even went to, and saying, "Hey, I know budgets are tough. We'd like to donate some reams of paper for your copy room, you know, to help you guys." And I remember the principal said, "Man, we're not interested in your help. We don't need you." And that was it. He hung up. And I was like, wow, this is going to be harder than I thought. And so he got removed. And the next year, we called and said, "Hey, can we do some pressure washing for free? Can we lay some mulch?" And they said, "Yeah." And after a couple schools, man, and our missions pastor Jorge Molina did a phenomenal job of just helping us see the big picture. That when we served with no strings attached, other schools started to trust us, and other schools started to say, "No, this isn't the kind of people that will, you know, say, hey, if we do this, you have to let me do that." So that's when we saw doors really start to open. And then as clubs got going, and we play by the rules, like that's the number one thing, is we play by all the rules. If they say do this, not that, praise God, and we still have a lot to learn. But as they learned they could trust, more doors have opened. So, yeah, but it really started with the serving. It really started with them being able to say, okay, there's no hidden agenda here, and that's when the doors open.
Yeah, and there are, to an increasing level, as I talk to youth pastors around the country, more and more schools are saying, hey, we're closed, we don't want you here. You know, you mentioned the one principal saying, we don't need you. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, a lot of people take that and stop trying to find a creative way to still love on and being involved in the campus. So I think two principles that you brought out there are really, really important. One, follow the rules of the school campus.
Big time.
And then number two, don't give up. Try to find a way to serve that school, serve that faculty, and pray that the Lord would open a door. Just because you can't go to lunch doesn't mean you can't be involved on your school campuses. And the most effective student ministries have a really strong campus ministry. So it's cool to see how you've been involved in missions in your community, opened a lot of doors for that as well. What are some things that you would say, man, we've learned this in this process of getting the culture of missions into our student ministry? What are some things you've learned along the way that you could say, man, we really messed up here and realized that's not the way to do it? Or what are some principles that you would say to a guy that's saying, man, I need to start doing this more?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think some of the things we learned were, it's not a program. You can't program living on mission. And so you really have to walk a delicate balance of giving experience and opportunity, but also teaching that, you know, just because you show up and do mission doesn't mean that that's your checklist for the year. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, for sure.
Helping students understand that just because you did this, it doesn't mean that you're done. And so really working through what that looks like. And then, you know, we've tried some different things. that really didn't go so well. You know, I think of some fun ones. We had some freshman guys go and clean toilets at restaurants, you know, and that was great. But I really, you know, they were freshman guys, so they took pictures of what was in the toilet, and you know, like turned into this thing where you're like, well, okay, but it really didn't get us anywhere with anybody, you know.
Yeah, all over Instagram.
Nice. Yeah, yeah. So like, okay, that we didn't see that coming, and so anyway. There's some things there, and then two, even with our mission camps, we've realized that with any kind of mission, that we had to be thinking next step.
Yeah.
Like, so what is it? What can a student do from here? Even if someone doesn't do mission camp, awesome, whatever it is. And then serving schools, I think one of our big things that we've been doing is on teacher work days. Even if you don't have a club in the school, on teacher work days, when students are off, we rally some students and we'll go and make breakfast for the teachers that have to be there, and then wash their cars while they're in the parking lot. Huh. And so we're saying, man, hey, Christ Fellowship loves you, whether or not we have a thing here. So you said earlier, you know, pursue even if you can't go to lunch. We've had to learn a lot of those things, and a lot of it's trial and error. We tried some stuff that was dumb and it didn't work. But I think those are some of the bigger lessons. Specifically, man, making sure kids don't think that they can check mission off the list because they went and did this thing. You know?
Yeah, for sure. What kind of dog do you have?
I'm so sorry.
No, she's good.
She's a boxer pit mix, and she just saw a cat and freaked out. I'm like, you got to be kidding me.
I love it. No, it's the first animal we've had as a guest on the podcast, so that was perfect. I love it. I had to ask, because if I was listening, I'd be like, man, I want to know what kind of dog that is.
She's a puppy. She's just over a year, and she will not get used to the cat, so whatever.
Let's kind of turn the corner a little bit and move from talking specifically about your student ministry and some of the things that the Lord has led you guys to do there in Miami, and talk about maybe some personal leadership things. Anytime we have one of these interviews, I always like to ask who you're learning from. Is there a certain person or group of people or books that you're reading? Who are you learning from right now?
Awesome. Yeah, right now I'm reading two different books. They're both about discipleship. For our for 2016 in our student ministry, discipleship is happening, but we've decided we want to make a, and this sounds bad, but I'm going to throw it out, like a standard of what we would say discipleship looks like. For instance, one leader may say, hey, I'm discipling somebody because he plays video games with them and they hang out. Well, that's awesome, but that's not discipleship. You know what I mean? And so,
yeah.
And then we've got the other who's meeting with kids and they're memorizing scripture. And so we've got the whole gamut. And so we've said, man, we need to create like a standard of what we say. Yeah, for sure, hang out with kids. But if you're going to say you're discipling, then here's what we want this to look like, and whatever. It's not a program, but at least when we say, yeah, you're discipling, we're all saying the same thing. And so I'm reading two books right now. Bonhoeffer's Discipleship talks a lot about grace. It's very, very good, and the result of life change as a result of being discipled. And I'm reading Disciple Shift by Jim Putman. It's also very good. And so those are the areas I'm walking through right now, trying to get a picture. I mean, I love discipleship. I've been discipling. But, you know, when we look at something like this, I'm trying to just get a bigger view of what it could look like. And so that's what I'm learning right now.
Great. I love the idea of you reinforcing to your group of leaders, hanging out is great, but we can't stop at hanging out. Mm-hmm. We see in Scripture, Jesus did a lot of hanging out with the disciples, but always took those opportunities when something would happen to draw a spiritual principle and bring up a learning for them that they could apply directly to their lives, or something that they could learn and take away from that life moment. So we have to, there needs to be a balance there of, yes, hang out, but use those hangout moments to cross the bridge into how Jesus calls us to live. So I'm one of those people, you know, I agree with you that discipleship isn't a program, while at the same time, it's something that should be strategically thought through, and mm-hmm. there should be some process attached to that, just so we can evaluate, know how it's going, give people some tracks to run on. So I'm not turned off by the processing or strategic thinking through discipleship at all.
For sure, for sure. And if we don't find a common ground where we say, hey, this is really what we think is effective discipleship, then the guy playing video games is thinking he's nailing it, you know, and can't do it.
Yeah, and discipleship doesn't happen by accident. It has to be thought through and planned and intentionality. What are some of the challenges that you are walking through right now as a leader?
The challenges, obviously, some of the ones that I think probably everybody face is the right leaders in the right place. You know, Collins said it really well. Jim Collins in his book, Good to Great, not only having the right people on the bus, but having them in the right seats on the bus, going the right direction. And so that one, you know, we're very volunteer dependent and volunteer heavy, which is fantastic. So us finding and working and developing key volunteers that take these massive leadership roles is definitely one of our challenges right now. We have structure in place to develop, but sometimes it doesn't seem like we can find enough leaders fast enough to keep doing what we want to do. And so that's one of our big leadership challenges right now, is, you know, making sure we have the right people in the right seats and that they're being trained and leading well. I'd say that's probably our biggest one. And then, you know, we're going through some structural changes and how we approach some things. And so that's another challenge, is, you know, looking for on our staff team, on our people that are immediately around, like who's got the giftings to handle different aspects of the ministry and handing off parts of the ministry. You know, and I read this book, The 80-20 Principle, and it talks a lot about, you know, what are the top, what it boils down is like, what's my top three or four things that I do well, and then I want to focus on those and then be able to hand off things that, you know, I could for sure do, but maybe somebody else has the gifting and really enjoys doing them, and so I could hand off to them so that I could focus on doing a few things really well. And so we're in that stage too of handing some things off, and I'd say those are our two biggest ones right now.
Yeah, how big of a role do you think, you mentioned several books that you've read or are reading right now, how big of a part is personal leadership development and kind of honing your skill and improving yourself, how much of a role does that play in your leadership as a whole?
It's massive. I would say it might be upwards of 80% of my leadership development. I have some great leaders around me, and I learn a lot from them, but it's not a daily thing, you know, and sometimes it's not a weekly thing. I mean, inadvertently maybe, but I'm not sitting in training sessions all day, you know, so when I can pick up a book and read, or, you know, I read a lot of articles, read a lot of blogs, that kind of stuff, anything that I can grab to implement is huge. And so I've learned that when I stop growing and I stop leading myself, it's difficult for me to be able to keep leading and developing others.
Yeah.
And so, and then what I can't expect from the people around me, what I don't expect of myself. And so, you know, I want to keep pushing forward.
What, knowing some things about you, I know that you like to spearfish and go into the ocean and snorkel and grab lobsters and things like that. Not everybody, that's one of the benefits, I guess, of being where you are. What is something that you've taken away from being out in the ocean and doing an activity like spearfishing that you've applied to leadership or ministry in some way?
Oh, great question. I think there's two things. One is discipline. We free dive, which means we hold our breath and we don't use any tanks. And there's a couple different places. Sometimes, you know, there's been a few times we go to the Bahamas or it's here. And so when it comes to finding the right fish, sometimes there's different depths involved. So there's personal challenges of, not only how long can I hold my breath, I want to get better at my breath hold, but I want to learn to go deeper and, you know, get more stealthy or what, you know, whatever it takes. So that's one area, is the personal discipline and the challenge, keeping myself in an attitude where, like, I'm even growing as a spear fisherman, if that makes sense, you know. But the second part of it is fear, especially early on. You know, there's a lot of unknowns out there. There's current, there's all these things that, you know, there's obviously big fish in the water that sometimes you're not the only one. I mean, three summers ago, me and my buddy were out and he got bit by a shark, you know, and so you learn to
deal.
Which is not the goal. That was a fail that day. And he's fine, all right? He's fine. 30 stitches, he's good. But so learning to deal with fear, and I don't just mean that. I mean, sometimes I realized, man, there were things that I was going to miss out on because I was like, dude, what if, da-da-da-da-da-da. And so to beat those fears, like probably 8 years ago, we started a midnight dive where we put on our gear once a year, and it's always the last week of July, and we jump in at midnight, pitch black water, and we go looking for lobster because it's one of those reaffirming things. It's like, yeah, okay, it's a little creepy, but it's fun as heck, and it helps me to, you know, just think through getting over something. And so fear and leadership, I mean, a lot of times, not a lot of times, that's not fair. I think sometimes in leadership we will stay away from something because we think of all the things that could happen instead of just going after it the right way and seeing it through. And so I think those are some of the principles. I've never, ever been asked that before, so my answer sounds incoherent. But off the top of my head, those are the two things right away that apply every day in life.
Yeah, and man, that's so good, because just taking the fear piece of that, man, I would be willing to guess there are a lot of student ministry leaders that are listening to this that are probably holding back from something because of some, maybe they don't want to label it as fear necessarily, but the unknown is what keeps them from doing that next thing or making that one strategic shift in their ministry that really could impact a lot of lives. And so, man, I think that principle's awesome. Last question that I'll end with here, and I always like to hit this real quickly as well, just because it seems to be a topic that comes up frequently in conversations that I have with youth workers around the country. What does it look like to lead a ministry well for you in your context and pour into students and develop leaders while at the same time pouring into your family and leading them well?
Man, that's a phenomenal question. And anytime I have this conversation, especially with some of the younger married guys that are with us, I always preface it with, and my personal take, obviously, is there will always be a tension. I don't know if you love ministry and you love your family, there's always going to be a tension of making sure I'm staying balanced, if that is such a thing. But
yeah.
Keeping that tension of, like, yes, I will love and serve my family so that there's no hesitation. They come first. At the same time, I love serving God. I'm passionate. I love what He's doing. And work's not even really work because I love doing it, you know? And so to do that well, I think takes work every day to evaluate, honest evaluation. It's got to start. I mean, for me, I keep a calendar of about 30 minute intervals almost all day. Like, everything's breaking down by 30 minutes to an hour, usually either a meeting or whatever. And so that does two things. One, it helps keep me on track, but it also gives me the chance to next week look back at this week and say, was there things I didn't really need to do that maybe took time from my family that I could have worked out to do somewhere else? So
yeah.
There's some honest evaluation there. Because I think for most guys and gals in student ministry, it's probably not that their family gets the lion's share of the time. It's probably that, you know, we're going after the work and I got to make sure I just make time for my family. You know,
yeah.
And we got to fight that. We got to look at an honest approach. So I think evaluation is a big piece. You know, what did I do with my family this week? What did I do with student ministry this week? Was I out 5 weeks, 5 nights of student ministry and football games? And, you know, I didn't hang out with my wife at all or whatever. So I think that is, and then good communication. One of the things my wife and I started doing a while ago that it's been so good, is we both sit down with our calendars and we talk through the next few weeks, 3-4 weeks at a time, if there's any trips or anything at night that's kind of out of the ordinary. And if she has a heads up as to what's coming, because sometimes I'm thinking, yeah, you know, sometimes I don't communicate well, to be honest. And so I know that's nobody else out there, but right. For me, that's what happens. If she has a heads up and she knows, and, you know, in student ministry sometimes, all of us know, some weeks are naturally a little busier than others, you know. But the communication and evaluation will help keep that tension of like, man, I can do my job well. I can feel like I lay my head down at night and I kicked butt. And then I can also feel like, man, I loved my family honestly today. And so for me, those have been the two areas that have helped us get a lot better. Because early on, Ben, I was not good, man. I was a workaholic, and I had my wife going, what are you doing? And I'm like, wait, what? And but God has been gracious. And so those are the two ways it's been helpful.
Man, that's great stuff. Great, great stuff. Well, Jeff, I appreciate your willingness to jump on and jump on the podcast and interview. I know it's been really, really valuable for our listeners today. So thank you for being here.
Man, it's an honor. It's really cool to hang out. Thank you.
Yeah, and our interview today has been with Jeff Borton, the student pastor at Christ Fellowship Church in Miami. If you want to check out more and learn more from Jeff, he is also the author of Simple Student Ministry, so you can check out that book as well. You can find it on Amazon. If you want to continue learning from Jeff and how God has used him in student ministry over the years. Thank you for listening today. As always, if you enjoy the podcast, I want to encourage you to drop by iTunes and leave us a positive rating and review. That helps other people who are looking for student ministry content to find us on iTunes. We would appreciate that. Have a great day. We'll see you next time.